Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The penultimate weekend of the season in the World Superbike Championship has been a very, very strange one indeed. Welcome to the latest instalment of the Full Throttle podcast from Eurosport. James Whittam and me, Greg Haynes, with you. I'm going to cut straight to the chase here, James. How much of a mess was that on Saturday?
Yeah, it was a mess. Lots of problems with the circuit down in Argentina. There's a walkout by the riders. I think about 15 out of 19 initially said they weren't prepared to race because of the high temperatures, low grip on the new asphalt that had only been laid last week, which was one of the problems, and the amount of dust offline making it really slippy if you got off the racing line. So they were going to have this walkout. There was 15 out of 19 of them, which meant the race wouldn't be able to be run. The organisers said, well, we think it's fit to race. Then there was all but six decided then they would race. Six sat out, so we had, 12 or 13 on the grid.
And, 12, yeah.
Yeah, 12 on the grid, and the race went ahead, a bit lacklustre. Nobody fell off, and then conditions improved temperature-wise, which meant there was a little bit more predictable grip for Sunday, and everybody raced, and we got some good racing, especially in the Supersport class, but left a little bit of a bad taste in some people's mouths. I know there were some things said by particularly Eugene Laverty about Jonathan Rea, said he was spineless and he should have sat out with the rest of us, and he was saying it was dangerous and he wasn't going to ride. Then he did ride. But loads of shenanigans like that. I've got to say, I think it shouldn't ever have got to the stage where riders felt that they should be doing that on safety grounds, because they're all members of a federation called the FIM. Federation of International Motorcyclists, and they organise or they sanction the races and they sanction the circuits. And to be allowed to run a world championship event, circuits have to come up to certain safety standards. And this one clearly didn't at the beginning of this year. They've had enough time to fix it. The FIM should have made them fix it, enough time to either run the meeting or not wait till everybody got there and then decide they hadn't fixed it. And have what happen. For me, FIM issue, and it shouldn't ever have come down to the riders. I hope they can get over it, because in the end, we've got some really quite exciting racing.
Now, last year, obviously, was the first meeting, wasn't it, for the San Juan circuit, the Vidicom circuit. It's obviously been checked. It was announced the April of the year before, 2017, it was announced. Race in the October of 18, race again now, October of 19. Let's go right back to the beginning then. When there's a new circuit, how do they go about setting it up, confirming everything's safe? Obviously, just talk us through briefly what the FIM has to do there.
Well, they go and inspect it, and they had several inspections when the circuit were being built. I remember before last year's meeting, all through summer, everybody was expecting it to be happening because the circuit wasn't finished. It was just about finished for the racing. The riders went over, said that the circuit's brilliantly laid out. There was some issues with some of the surface breaking up, but if that could be fixed, everybody would love to race there. We got the racing out of the way last year. The FIM, as far as I'm aware, gave the circuit a list of things that needed tweaking to make the place right. There was some resurfacing needed doing and little bits of problems with some of the gravel traps, but not much. And they didn't do it, basically, whether that's for financial reasons or... What we are told is that there's not a lot of other action goes on at this circuit. There's not a lot of track days, not a lot of car race meetings, no other bike race meetings. So really, they run about three or four meetings a year, and that's not enough to keep the circuit maintained and to suss out when something is going wrong, either a circuit's surface is breaking up or tarmac has become really slippy or brittle. And they should have really done a bit more running with this circuit, and they'd have found out the problems that we found out on Friday a lot earlier and been able to rectify them. That said, the organisers at the circuit are the nicest friendliest bunch in the world. It's in a brilliant part of the world. It's spectacular in terms of views and positioning. And everybody likes the shape of the circuit. It's a really well-designed circuit with ups and downs and off-camber and on-camber and twisty bits and straight bits. And it's just a really nice track that just needs a little bit of tweaking. And you do feel sorry for the circuit owners because I don't think they've got a ton of money to play with. And by far their biggest meeting of the year. So they're desperate to have the 50 or 60,000 people that turn up, 80,000 last year, pay the money and watch some spectacular racing. And you've got a feel for all parties. For me, it was late in the day for the FIM to decide that the circuit wasn't fit and make them do all the remedial work that, to be fair, the circuit knew about earlier at the last minute. In fact, we're told that as the teams arrived and started unpacking the flight cases at the circuit on Wednesday and Thursday, there were still re-tarmacking going on and steamrollers on the track, and that's too late. Brand new tarmac never ever gives the grip that it does when it's got bedded in and added a little bit of racing on it. It's kind of oily at the beginning, especially when the conditions are warm, which until Sunday every afternoon was really warm. We're talking track temperatures about 60 odd degrees centigrade on Friday and Saturday, and that's hot, and that meant there wasn't a lot of grip on the new tarmac.
You host obviously a lot of track days, don't you, in the UK? How do you keep a circuit clean? I know that sounds like a stupid question, but one of Greg's stupid questions. How do you actually keep a circuit clean? Is it just to have regular activity on the track? Is that the best way to do it?
Yeah, regular activity helps, and regular activity also helps you suss it out when something is going wrong before you would if you'd left the circuit and arrived there when there's nothing been happening there for a month.
It's just as though everyone turned up though earlier in the week, FIM, Dorner, circuit organisers, whoever, and thought, oh, track's a bit of a mess here.
We've got problems.
Oh, we need to put some new tarmac down. It just seems so ridiculous.
Yeah, it was last minute, that's what I'm saying, and it should have been sussed out a lot earlier. One of the problems they've got at Villicombe is it's in a fairly barren, it's beautiful, right in the foothills of the Andes, about 2,200 feet above sea level. But one of its problems is the outlying landscape is quite barren and quite dusty. And therefore, the track, when it's not used, gets very dusty. And it'll take 3 or 4 days worth of racing action, less if it's a car race, but 3 or 4 days of bike racing to clean up the dust. It would have helped if they've had, 3 or 4 road sweepers just to go around and sweep the worst of it off and then let the rubber be laid down by the riders on the racing line and away we'd have gone. But
could they have then, on that issue, could they have not just run a few cars for a few days before the race event, a week ago, 2 weeks ago, whatever? That would have done a hell of a lot of good, wouldn't it? Surely for a start. I know there's the temperature thing we'll get to in a minute, but in terms of getting that dust off the track, why didn't they do it? It doesn't make any sense.
Well, that would have helped. What I have to say is, in the defence of the circuit, every circuit has issues of a different nature. So, for example, in the old days when Cadwell Park only ever got used on the club layout and we never used the woodland section because it was easier to manage and easier to marshal just on the shorter layout, the club layout, when you went to a national meeting and used the national circuit at Cadwell that used the whole of the woodland circuit joined onto the clubman section, well, it was always different grip levels on each half because one had been used every weekend for club racing and the other hadn't been used for 3 months or 4 months and it was under the trees and it was full of moss. So it took, 2 days of riding to get the moss off. And so every circuit has different issues. We've seen big leaf problems at places like Cadwell and Alton Park. These are just British circuits I'm coming up with. Same, they had leaf problems. I remember a few times that I went to Hockenheim because that's right in the forest. So different circuits have different issues and, the more running you can do on them, the more money it'll generate. And it's a little bit unfortunate, the position of the circuit in terms of getting things to happen at the circuit, because it's pretty much in the middle of nowhere. It's not like the British circuits and a lot of the Spanish circuits where there's every single day there's a corporate event, a track day or race meetings every weekend. They don't get any of that. The track, because of where it is, isn't, and because of the situation in Argentina, isn't used as much, and that's a problem for them.
From the outside, because from my point of view, obviously, I'm not a rider. I can't comment on the track as you can or the professional riders who are on the grid now can. But it just seems like no one really has taken any responsibility. It seems as though everyone's blaming everyone. The FIM's blaming the circuit. To be fair, I haven't really heard anything from anyone from the track itself. Dorna haven't officially said anything. Of course, they're the commercial rights holder. The FIM is the governing body. The riders are blaming the FIM. There's riders blaming other riders. It just seems like no one actually wants to take any responsibility to try and get it sorted out.
Yeah, nobody wants to take responsibility. But for me, it's quite simple. The FIM have ultimate power to sanction or not sanction a circuit. They knew 6 months ago, at least, that the circuit may have problems. They had told the circuit they needed some parts of it resurfacing and other odds and sods, but not much. It was just a resurfacing mainly. And they told them they had to do it. They should have inspected it 3 or 4 months ago, or at least enough in front so that if they hadn't done the work, there was a cut-off point where nobody went trailing out there and came up against the problems we did on Thursday and Friday. So for me, the ultimate responsibility lies with the FIM.
So what do you think they should do now to make sure this does not happen again next year? Because we know FIM representatives have gone out there at least 3 times since the last racing last year. What do they do to make sure this doesn't happen again?
Yeah, they firm with the circuit. They say, you've got to do this. We know we had these problems last year. We want to come, but if you want us there, you have to come up to these standards. If you haven't done it by X date, we're not coming. That's it, simple.
So, because they were saying this weekend, weren't they, that they've told the circuit to do X, Y and Z, but they haven't done it. So they left it too late to say that, maybe.
Well, they left it too late to really stop it, because they'd have sold a lot of everybody's bikes and equipment and staff was on the way there. There were tickets booked, there were money spent, and there were people booked in who'd bought tickets. You know, what we've not mentioned is the poor old punters who want to see a day's racing and have paid their hard-earned money out the backside pocket to do that. Once you've got down that road, it's difficult to stop. Before that, it's quite easy to cancel.
I'm just glad that Leandro Mercado managed to come through and get 8th place this afternoon. Great ride from him, wasn't it? And it was nice to see the crowd cheering on Leandro Mercado and jumping up and down with joy.
Something to cheer about. Yeah, it was. Yeah. And eventually the meeting had a fairly nice feel to it. But really, I'd been a little bit mad through, well, for me, a little bit of bad management, really.
Right, let's play in a couple of interviews here. Eugene Laverty, first of all, and then Jonathan Ray, who had his right to respond. Eugene Laverty was speaking with Charlie Hiscott on Saturday afternoon. Jonathan Ray with Charlie Hiscott on Sunday morning. Here they are.
Well, there's always going to be a few fools that want to ride, and there was a couple of guys like Bautista and Rinaldi wanted to ride for whatever reason. But we had guys like the world champion, Johnny Ray, with us, stood there ready to support us. He didn't want to ride, Alex Lowes didn't want to ride, Van der Mark, everybody. So there ain't many riders that did want to, and really disappointed in Johnny Ray. You know, he is our representative as the world champion. He needed to have more backbone, and he made a very spineless decision to go and race, and he let us down a bag full, and it's something that I'm going to have to speak to him about afterwards.
You personally got a bit of flack from Eugene and Leon Camier and the 6 riders that didn't ride. What was your take on that?
Well, opinions are opinions. You know, I had mine. I was in the cabin, and what happened in there, I don't want to talk too much about it and make big statements, because everyone has their point of view, whether they've got something to gain or not. But to be honest, I disagreed completely flat out with marching on the pit lane in our civvies like some kind of army, and we're going to show them, because it's not the right thing to do. You know, we're one identity here. We're super bright. We have to try. You know, there's guys, this is a country that's really struggling, and there's people paying tickets to come and see us. At least go to the grid. So I said, I'm going to get changed and go. And they don't like that my opinion was different from there, but I'm not going to get peer pressured into something I don't want to do. Nobody held a gun to my head to go and ride. Well, there's a lot of stories about getting fined. That's nothing to do with it. We're racing for a manufacturer's title as well. And I felt the conditions, whilst not ideal and whatever, we could race. And we got a good race underway, you know, 21 laps. And those who started finished, and we got 20 points at the end of the day.
Right. So very strong words there from Eugene Laverty, I think it must be said. What was your take on all that?
My take on all that is the fact that the riders have a thing called a sort of self-appointed safety commission where the 4 or 5 of the top riders, I don't just know how it's organised, to be quite honest, but I know that there's 4 or 5 members of a thing called the safety commission who are a bunch of riders who promote safety for themselves. You know, that it's not like most sports or professions where there's, let's say, a union, you know, a collection of people who have a collective voice. This is 4 or 5 riders who are world championship, world-class riders who want to be racing on safe circuits, and they have a voice, but on this occasion, they didn't stick together. There was pressure from various sides. The team managers and teams and manufacturers wanted to race. The organisers wanted the race to go ahead. The circuit owners did. Lots of people paid a lot of money to come through the gate. And essentially, the pact, if you like, the mutiny, fell apart. And everybody has their own reasons. It's we talk about teams, race teams, but this is an individual sport. It always has been, always will be. And everybody has a different standpoint, different things to lose and gain. For example, the two Yamaha riders, Van der Mark and Lowes, have third in the championship to fight for. They were always going to ride, I think. And if one of them hadn't ridden, the other one would have gone, well, I'll ride because I can gain something here. So I think from Eugene Laverty and the other five riders who didn't race on Saturday, they were fed up with, especially Jonathan Rea, because he, as world champ, is, you know, carries more weight than anybody else in his opinion. They were disappointed that he went and raced when he said he wasn't going to do. Whether that is the case or not, I don't know. And Jonathan Rea says he never really agreed with the way they were going about it, although he admitted the circuit had safety issues. But that said, he was prepared to race. So there were strong words from Eugene Laverty and others, to be quite honest, but they all had their own opinion, and there's nobody wrong. You know, the riders that didn't race want to race. They felt there was a safety issue and they were trying to protect themselves and the other riders. So you can't blame them for doing it. There was no outside, you know, incentive to do it. It was purely safety from their point of view. And, you know, they fell out because they didn't stand together. And that's the problem. If you have, let's call it a union, or a bunch of representatives, you've got to stick together. But it should never, I'll say again, it should never have come down to that.
Yeah.
The FAM should be looking out for the riders. You pay a licence fee, and it is their job to look after safety.
Yeah, I think it's proven again, hasn't it, what was said in Qatar last year, and even more so at Imola this year. You can't put it down to the riders, can you? They shouldn't be in a position where they have to decide whether they're racing or not. Of course, they've got their opinion, but... Yeah, like you say, should someone else have made a call? The problem is somebody else did make a call, didn't they? They said the track's safe. The FIM told the team bosses, so we're told, the track is safe. They need to race. But the riders disagreed with that. Yeah, some of them did.
The funny thing is that it is the riders who are best placed to call whether a track is safe to ride or not, because they're the ones riding these 235 horsepower monsters. How can an ex-rider that maybe not as like me, I know what's a safe track when I raced, and I could have a good go at deciding now. I still ride fast motorbikes around circuits, but I you know, if Jonathan Rea tells me that a portion of circuit anywhere in the world is a little bit dangerous, who am I? He's going around corners quicker than me. If he slides off, he's going to go further. Yeah. If he slides off, he's going faster, he's going to go further. He's going to hit a barrier harder if it's in the wrong place. So they have to be listened to. But then you've got to have somebody speaking for them, because otherwise, if you leave it just up to the riders, then you get these other incentives sort of chucked in. Everybody's got their own kind of agenda. So it's a difficult situation. And it surprises me that the riders in this day and age don't have a riders' association, you know, like a professional football association. They all have it. Everybody has, most professional sports have a governor, not a governing body, because that would be the FAM or the ACU. They have a body, themselves, of with a representative that maybe an ex-rider that they can consult with, and he can almost do the dirty work, like. But they've got to agree with each other, and that's the problem.
Now, we heard, obviously, that a few of the manufacturers slash teams put massive pressure. Kawasaki, we believe, was one of them, on their riders to go out and race. Jonathan Rea alluded to it in his interview there, that there's a manufacturer's title still up for grabs. Big battle going on there between Ducati and Kawasaki. Obviously, Kawasaki's picked up more points this weekend. Two wins. Ducati's had one. Does it not make the safety commission look a bit silly, though, James, when you've got... There's four riders, there's four superbike riders on the safety commission. Jonathan Rea, Eugene Laverty, Leon Kamier, and Chaz Davis. Three of them didn't race on Saturday. One of them did. That was obviously Jonathan Rea. Obviously, there's no set rule that there needs to be a majority or anything like that. But as some of the people have been saying on Twitter across the weekend, what's the point having a safety commission if they can't make a sort of unanimous vote anyway?
Well, that's, I would say, none. That's what I'd say. I would agree with the people on Twitter. You know, if you're not going to stand together and you've got a kind of agreement to stand with the majority of that safety commission or the people on the grid, that's putting the sort of neck on the line on a race bike, well, there is no point. I say it again, the FAM should be doing this work, and they should consult with riders, and I know they do, and they use ex-riders as circuit inspectors. You know, they're the best placed people to recommend what is safe and what isn't safe. I am sure that a Manx Norton going around a bumpy cobbled track with ribbed tyres on, if you slid off that, you, even though you didn't wear anything like the same amount of protective wear, you wouldn't slide as far as somebody on a super smooth track falling off a bike with 6.5-inch wide slicks on. You would be going a lot faster. Therefore, when you hit the deck, you would slide a lot further. And so things change. So you must consult with the most current riders you can. And it's the only, for me, the worst thing about it was it's left superbikes looking a little bit disorganised, and that's a bad thing because there's some good racing there. Think back to Magna Coa a couple of weeks ago. What a brilliant meeting that was. You know, now we're saying, oh, they can't get their own house in order. And also, the second sort of bad thing for me was the fact that I like to see riders getting on. You know, I loved about when my time in racing, one of the things I miss is being part of a bond in a paddock. It was brilliant. And it still exists, but I don't like to see people fall. You know, a lot of people say, I don't mind a bit of needle. Well, I don't mind a bit of needle on track, but falling out about stuff like this and having genuine kind of bad feeling with each other, it's a sad thing for me.
We've seen this a few times as well now, haven't we, this year? Incidents on track, incidents with situations like this, family members getting involved, parents on Twitter, wives, girlfriends, whatever, all mixing. It just, I don't know, it doesn't really send out a very positive message or a good example to the general public, does it, surely? When there's people who, I guess, should be role models. To be fair, actually, the riders aren't always the worst, are they, in that sort of situation?
No, we saw it, where do we see it? Jerez, we saw a little Jonathan Ray incident, and, it's all sport. You know, you might say it's only sport, but it's important to the people who are involved in it, you know, and they're passionate about it. I know people who love a bit of kind of, you know, shenaniganry and a bit of bad feeling in the paddock, but not me. I love my racing, and all my mates were bike racers, and most of my friends these days are still in the bike race paddock, and I respect people who can do what we watch every weekend and what we talk about. So it's a bit of a sad thing for me. That said, I'm sure they'll get over it.
Could it be dangerous, though, when you've got people who, at the moment, I guess, don't really respect each other very much, certain individuals or certain parties, groups in the paddock, whatever you want to call it? Could that lead to a bit of danger on the track, you know, if that respect isn't there, or is that a different kind of respect?
That's a different kind of respect. On track, doing what they do on bikes, going as fast as you can on a fast motorbike with other people inches away from you is a dangerous undertaking, right? We know that.
And
we
even comparing bike and car racing, there's a big difference, isn't
In a car race, you can quite easily nudge somebody, touch somebody, scrape down the side of them, give them a tip into a corner. Not so with bikes. No. Absolutely not so. It is impossible on a bike to knock somebody else off their bike without risking falling off yourself.
Yeah.
You have to have it. Don't matter how much you dislike somebody, you have to have respect for them on track. And for the most part, they do.
Do you think enough action is going to be taken, James, now? And by the way, anyone listening, we don't really like to have to talk about this, but this is obviously dominating all the headlines. Unfortunately, it's the same with car racing, F1 in particular. These negative situations often attract more attention, don't they, from other members of the media who wouldn't normally cover the championship than the good things. Unfortunately, that seems to be the case in life in general. But, I mean, will there be conversations going on behind the scenes now? Because, I mean, how do we know that we're not going to turn up there next year and have the same thing again? It just seems in a way that after Imola and this and Qatar last year, it's almost as though they're not really learning from these things. Well, I know it's easy for me to say it, but
yeah, Imola was a different situation. The track was deemed safe, and it was safe until the rain came. So it was a very localised, very temporary problem that meant we had to miss a race at Imola. Totally different scenario at Argentina. They knew they were going to have problems and didn't address it quick enough.
Because it wasn't just the dust, was it? It was the temperature as well.
The temperature on the new tarmac, that was the biggest problem. And you couldn't avoid going over that hot tarmac that didn't have a lot of grip, because offline there was no grip because it was dust. So it was a combination. As far as people, you know, the headlines going to the sort of daft stuff as opposed to racing, that's human nature.
Yeah.
I remember at our school, your school might have been a bit different there, Greg, but I was I went to a proper comprehensive school, and if a fight occurred after school and it had been talked about at school, that got a bigger crowd than sports day did. So people have always been like that, and I'm sure they always will be. For me, bike racing has always been a little bit more pure and a little bit more about sportsmanship, because they've got to respect each other on track than a lot of other sports are.
Let's talk quickly about Randy Krumenacker, because there's been an amazing situation there. In fact, let's listen to this. If you haven't heard this yet, this might take you by surprise.
Randy, that looked like a pretty tough race.
Yeah, it was a very tough race. I'm always straight and very honest, and I don't care about the consequence. It's really obvious that they slow me down. Like, my engine really doesn't go at all. Like, I cannot even stay in slipstream.
Who slow you down?
Yeah, the team boss, because obviously they need to let win Caricasulo. Because
really?
I never had such a slow bike. And I can't even stay in slipstream of a GMT 94 bike. And I'm really, I'm pissed off. Because they have to give me the same than him, and they obviously don't give me the same. It's very clear.
So what about Qatar?
I don't know, because I don't have a better engine than this. So I really don't know. All I can do is fight like in this race. But it's really hard. It's really, really hard.
All right, thanks very much, Randy.
Thank you.
Now that left you speechless, sat next to me in the commentary box. Shaky Byrne and James Hayden were both open mouthed back in the Eurosport studio, which we could see on our screen in our commentary box. What on earth happened there?
Randy Krumenacker feels he has been given a slower bike by his team. The amazing thing is the guy he's dicing for the lead of the championship and the actual championship with just one round to go is his teammate. You wouldn't think they'd need team orders. I don't think there has been team orders. He feels he's been given a slower engine.
So when he says a slower engine, James, what does that actually mean? What would the engineers physically have to do to make his engine slower than Caricasulo?
These are fuel-injected engines with a electronic control unit. You can turn these things down. You can make these things produce as much you can't make them produce as much power as you want, because that comes down to mechanical parts like cams and pistons and compression ratios, the rest of it. But you can certainly turn them down electronically, just like you can make them do only 60 miles an hour in the pit lane, or 60 kilometres an hour in the pit lane. So he is implying, I must say at this point, because I don't know, that his team have kind of dumbed his bike down somehow, and it's not as quick as what it should be, and he couldn't pass anybody on the straight, and yet his teammate could. And I have to say, in that race, I never really noticed that Krumenacker's bike was slower, but I did notice that his teammate seemed to have a fairly sharp one, because he made a couple of passes down the straight. But it's difficult with a straight like that on a supersport bike. Maybe that slipstream effect, you know, maybe he has got a fairly sharp bike. They do differ slightly. But anyway, he's gone out there and blamed his team for giving him a slow bike. Well, what I can say is he's got a round left where he's got to work with that team. I'm assuming he won't be racing for him next year, but he's got a race with him at Qatar, and if he didn't have a slow bike in Argentina, I'm fairly certain he will have at Qatar.
I mean, what stops? I've heard the same, that he's out of there at the end of the year. I mean, Randy Krumenacker is backed by Yamaha Switzerland, but pretty much pays for his ride there. I reckon he might have signed with MV for next year, but we'll find out. He's definitely leaving that team anyway. What stops the team boss just saying, well, sorry mate, you're not coming to Qatar now?
Nothing. It would not surprise me if he wasn't on their bike at Qatar. If they did sack him and he had enough time, he's got a couple of weeks, he probably has time not to have a bike built, but certainly borrow one, tweak it, put his settings on it and get it out to Qatar.
That's true, because obviously his championship points will still be there, where he doesn't have to be with the same team.
No, not at all. No, you can switch as much time as you want. There's a team championship, there's a riders' championship, and there is a manufacturer's championship. You would think he'd want to be still on a Yamaha. He knows his business on them. But hey, listen, we're getting ahead of ourselves here. You'd think he'd still be riding for the same team in Qatar, but whether they are going to be on his side, knowing he's leaving them at the end of the year and knowing that he is kind of calling them behind their backs, it's a bit of a weird situation. At the end of the season, let it all out, Randy.
Yeah.
Let him have it.
Yeah.
But like, round to go, might not be the best plan.
I mean, obviously, Caricasudo is Italian, the team's Italian, sponsors are Italian, but you know, Krimenak has led the championship and had great support, it would appear, all the way through the year so far. Yeah, I mean, that is quite amazing. I've never known someone come out quite so directly like that for a while and just, you know, slag the team off, basically, in public.
What I would say is, probably the wrong way to go about it for Randy, but in the heat of the moment, he's just taking his helmet off, he's still sweating, he's still angry, and he probably said something he's going to regret.
It's like getting up in the morning when you're in a bit of a bad mood.
It's a different thing. When you've raced, the adrenaline is flowing, your blood's up, and if you've had a knock with somebody on track, it's easy. I've gone storming around to people's garages and kicked off and throwing things about and causing a fight. That's not me. Mm. I'm the least likely person to do that. But in the heat of the moment, it's amazing what you'll do. Better to sort of step back and think, right, what should I be saying? I'm sure if you'd have taken a couple of deep breaths and had a cup of tea and thought about it for 10 minutes, you wouldn't have said what he said. But he did. And what I would say is it's out of character. I mean, what a lovely fella he is.
Yeah.
Really conscious. He's very, very Swiss. He's very Swiss.
Yeah.
You know, you can just see him sort of, you know, cutting a bit of cheese off and just going, he's just a lovely fella. He ain't got a bad bone in him. But yeah, he's gone and said that.
Now, of course, that went out on Eurosport. Then it went out on the Eurosport Twitter feed.
It's all over social media now.
All over social media. Other websites have picked that up and it's all over the place already before he'd even had a chance to probably get back to have a shower and get changed or whatever. It's already out there. The team will know he said that now, of course. Yeah, strange, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. It makes it interesting for us. He goes into Qatar, the last round for the Super Sports, one race, 8 points in front of his teammate, Caracasulo, and it's all to play for. That could easily go either way. And not only that, with Jules Clazel winning, he's only 22 points off the lead. So if them two beat the living daylights out of each other and both go down like they did in France at Magny-Cours, you never know. He can win this. He has to win. I mean, Clazel has to win and something has to happen to the other two, but it's possible.
It's possible. It's World Supersport. And no one in that paddock, in any of the classes, deserves a title more than Jules Clazel, I do believe. I mean, he's finished second, third, if you combine it, second or third, five or six times. He's had so much bad luck, hasn't he, James? 20-time race winner now, Jules Clazel. The feeling I got from Jules and from the team after the round in France is that he sort of succumbed to the pressure a bit that weekend in front of his home crowd. Only finished sixth, didn't he, when the other two had crashed. But this weekend, he was sublime, wasn't he? Brilliant win for Clazel. And he'd been really, really ill on Thursday.
Yeah, some kind of man flu type thing on Thursday. Didn't get any sleep the night before. A little bit of jet lag, possibly, with the long flight out. And then went to bed and just didn't get up. I think it was 10 or 12 hours in bed. Yeah. When he did get up Thursday afternoon, he was in better shape and performed really well all weekend and culminating in that win on Sunday that was absolutely stunning. I mean, he just cleared off. He wasn't going to be beaten.
Battle for third in the overall Superbike Championship. Tremendous fight going on there. It's been Lowe's and Vandermark all year long, of course, bragging honours there, of course, bragging rights because Lowe's is leaving the team, Vandermark's staying. And then the guys coming into the team next year is creeping up on them.
Top rack.
I think it's like 6 points now, isn't it? I'm trying to remember. We've only just gone off air. But even so, it's very close. Any one of those three could finish third, fourth or fifth now.
Yeah, that's it. Those places are up for grabs. And for me, it's Top Rack who has the momentum going now. Rostam got his first couple of wins at Magny-Cours, then on the Rostam here. He's on really on form. And he's going to take some stopping. I do feel he's going to take some stopping.
Quick last thing before we do go, James. There's a few people saying they reckon, and this is paddock insiders and on Twitter, but more people in the paddock, actually, I'd have to say, former riders and so on. They reckon the Kawasaki is going to suit Alex Lowe's better next year, certainly initially, than the Yamaha will suit Toprak, is that fair?
They're going off the fact that Toprak's quite an aggressive rider, rattles in really hard on the brakes and gets it stopped and gets it fired out the corner by being aggressive on the throttle. That is true. Maybe that's the way he has to ride that Kawasaki. The Yamaha would appear to be quite a different machine. The way to get the best out of that, from what we see and what we're told, is you let the brakes off slightly earlier, you settle the bike down, you go into the corner slightly quicker, and you roll around the corner slightly quicker. Therefore, you've got more lean angle for longer and you can't get on the gas as hard. But when you can get on it more gently and get the thing driving and carry the speed out the corner. Two different ways of riding a bike. Whether the Yamaha has to be ridden like that or whether you can ride it the top rack way, we're going to find out. But he's 21. Whatever he needs to do, I am sure he can adapt. Maybe it's going to take him a little bit of time. From Alex's point of view, he's joining the world champ, the five-time world champ, on what is arguably the best bike in the championship. Maybe not the fastest sometimes, but overall, and if you look at it in the round and take the team into consideration, probably the best team and best bike. It's won the championship five times anyway in the hands of Jonathan Rea. And if you're going to have a chance at beating Jonathan Rea, and I think it's going to be a small chance, why not think you can do it on the bike that he's done it on? Yeah. It probably gives you the best chance. So I think Alex will be looking forward to it. I think he will.
So to conclude, final question then, back to where we started. Do we just have to brush off Argentina 2019 and say, oh, well, it's one of those things that happens sometimes. It happened at MotoGP at Silverstone last year. Happened at BSB Silverstone a few years ago. Or are there going to be more questions asked? You know, do some pretty fundamental changes need to be made to avoid a slightly embarrassing situation happening yet again?
No, they have to basically do what they should have done in the first place to the organisers and the FIM, and it has to be inspected and they have to come up to scratch, and if they don't, we don't go. That's how you avoid that one.
Yeah, before you've shipped everything out there and flown everyone out there and booked hotels and all the rest of it.
Correct. Me personally, I hope we definitely run and come back to Argentina because it's a brilliant place. The people are lovely. The position of the circuit is second to none. It's stunning. And the shape of the circuit's brilliant. Just needs a little bit of tweaking, and I hope they do it.
Does money overrule it though, James? I mean, you know, are the organisers thinking, well, we sold the tickets, we've got TV broadcasters around the world wanting to show the race. If we cancel it, you know, what are we going to do then? Is there that element of it there? Is there pressure put on from a commercial side to the safety people? You know, we sort of got to run this.
I'm sure there is. I'm sure there's commercial pressure. You know, most people need to make money, and that includes the riders at that level. But from a sporting point of view, it's a brilliant circuit. It gave good racing, and I want to come back.
Who's your money on for Supersport, and who's your money on for BSB? That's, of course, coming up this weekend at Brands Hatch.
Supersport World Championship, I am going with Caracasulo, but I feel really sorry for Randy Krumenacker. Whether he was done badly by his team or not, I don't know, but I don't like to see a man upset, and he was really upset, and he's had a brilliant season, and he's a good bloke. Mm. But I'll still stick with Caracasulo because I went with him before the season started. If he can't win it, I'd love to see Jules Clazel win it, but I don't think he will. Mm. And British Superbike, you have to go with Scott Redden. He's been to Brands before and coped pretty well on his first visit there. He hasn't made many mistakes this year, and I think he's going to take some beating. That said, I think it's going to be mucked about weather this late in the year at Brands. You don't generally get a meeting that's dry the whole weekend, so who knows? We know how good Josh Brooks is in any kind of inclement weather. We've seen him win there before. Even when he isn't in for the championship, he can win races there, so we'll see.
And in the same way, there's an outsider in World Supersport with Jules Clazel needing to go to Qatar and win the race and hope the other two have trouble. There's an outsider in BSB in that Tommy Bridewell needs to go there, win three races and hope the other two have trouble, but it ain't over till it's over.
It's not over. That'd be brilliant for Tommy. He'd be a really popular winner because a popular bloke, wears his hat on his sleeve, good guy, a bit daft, and I mean that in a good way. Yeah. That's why people like him, but that's a massive mountain to climb for him. He's already had a good season as Tommy.
James, thanks very much. It's been a weird weekend, I think it's fair to say, for Argentina for World Superbikes. We'll be back though live on Eurosport 2 British Superbike this weekend. Shaky Show podcast coming up here on the Eurosport website, Spotify and iTunes next Wednesday. Then, of course, just a few days after that, we're back on air for qualifying in Race 1 on the Friday, remember, for Qatar. But first of all now, after a mess in Argentina, it must be said, let's hope that doesn't happen again. All of our attention turns back to the Bennett's British Superbike Championship. It's Redding, Brooks and Bridewell this weekend. We'll see you there.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.